There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday at the front of the Memorial Day weekend with our somber holiday on Monday. And a quick reminder here, too, and we'll talk about it in the second hour as well, but going on Monday at USS Alabama Battleship Memorial Park at 7 a.m. on Monday, Memorial Day flag lowering ceremony is going to be held at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. The ceremony is free of charge, public invited to attend. Also throughout the day, activities going on. You have the Life South Community Blood Services holding their Memorial Day blood drive. That starts at 10:30 on Monday morning, goes till 4 in the afternoon. Donors encouraged to give a blood in memory of a service member. Also, the Blood Mobile will be set up adjacent to the gift shop there right by the battleship. Also, the 13th Annual Memorial Day Flag Relay will end on the deck of the USS Alabama. The relay will begin at the Army National Guard and U.S. Coast Guard bases and wind through the streets of Mobile. Runners are expected to enter the Battleship Memorial Park about 10:20 on Monday morning. They will conduct flag touches at all the U.S. and service flags within the park and end the relay aboard the USS Alabama. All flags carried during the relay will be presented to area military families who have lost members in service to our country. Battleship Memorial Park open at 8 for everybody on Monday and will close at 5. Last ticket of the day sold at 4 p.m. More info on their website, ussalabama.com, or their great Facebook page. Just look for USS Alabama Battleship Memorial Park. All right, a lot to do on today's show, and good to have this man back in studio. And he gets probably tickled that I call him Chief Director, but he's Director of Public Safety Director for the City of Mobile, but I called him Chief so many times. Lawrence Batiste in studio. Good to see you again, sir. I want to talk about, a lot to talk about here with this, and I don't know what I'm missing here. Something's on a switch, Dalton, if we can get this fixed. I don't know what has happened to my studio here. Let me put you on that other mic right there. I'm going to get you on this mic right here, because I don't know exactly why that's happening. All right. Good to see you back in the studio.
Good to be back again, Sean.
A lot to talk about, and it was framed yesterday, kind of this discussion of gun violence in our city. Three shootings yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And if, from your perspective, we've talked about this many times. What's going on here? What's going wrong?
You know, I often try to figure out how do we deal with violent crime in our community, and oftentimes there are a lot of different pieces associated with it. So as you think about the shootings that we had occur yesterday, I think one of them deals with a domestic situation where you have, you know, people that are in a relationship for one reason or another, and next thing you know, as opposed to being able to solve conflict through conversation, they result to physical violence, which ultimately in some cases end up in gunfire. You have other situations where it's potentially retaliatory shooting because one of their buddies got shot, so they're going to shoot their buddies, and you know, nothing good ever comes from that, because you know, we always go back to, you either end up with somebody dead, or you end up with somebody in prison, or you end up with both. And so families suffer. They suffer a lot more beyond those two individuals that may be directly involved. You know, you have fathers that become absentee fathers, their children are raised by single-parent households. Those children are more likely to be engaged in violent crime themselves because they have an absentee parent. And so there are a lot of pieces that we continue to try to work on here in the city of Mobile through education, through different programs, Project Thrive, Victims Advocacy Program. But ultimately, it boils back down to personal accountability accountability and responsibility for those individuals that live in our community to do their part to make sure that we don't have this type of criminal behavior in our community.
You know, you talked about, we were talking before we went on the air, remember when you were chief and you gave a press conference and a speech, and you had talked about it, this retaliatory, like Hatfields and McCoys,
right. Yes,
almost,
sir.
That this and solving, shutting this down. You know, you were out of tolerance for it, if you ever had any.
Right.
It takes, just on that side, we can talk about the other crime, but it takes somebody stepping up and being the bigger person, right?
Without a doubt. I mean, you know.
But I understand their human emotion, too. You shoot my family member. I mean, I understand, but somebody has to stop it.
You know, we all want justice, in particular if you're the victim of a violent crime. And I think that one of the things that you've heard me say, and many other people have heard me say, is that I believe that our department is one of the best, if not the best, in solving crimes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not our goal. We don't want to be known for solving crimes. We really want to be known for preventing crimes in our community. You know, our clearance rates are where we would like them to be, and we would, you know, obviously you would want them to be better. But at the end of the day, if we only had one victim, we didn't do what we needed to do for that victim and that victim's family. And so our goal is to drive our community in a direction where we don't have that type of violent crimes, or at least large numbers of violent crimes within our community. But that is a holistic effort that has to take place by the entire community.
Right. Is there, and with that being said, there's no amount, you said it correctly, one victim too many. But it has been an increase beyond, and I hate to say it because I think there's no tolerable rate, but it seems chronic, acute, at the same time, it seems indiscriminate and specific. We looked through just yesterday these different, or looked through the last month, the kinds of shootings that it's not just the bad guy versus bad guy or the retaliatory, they shoot somebody's child while this is going on.
Right. And there again, you know, how do we educate those individuals that are most likely to commit these type offenses? Again, it's through our collaborations with what we have with our school system. We've got to do more of that. We've got to truly get out and have a grassroots effort in getting it in our communities and getting people to understand that violence in itself begets more violence. We also have to make sure they understand that there are other means to resolve the conflict that they're dealing with. You know, in most cases where you deal with individuals that are involved with violent crime, one, I've always said it's an emotional act, but the other thing is this, most of the time they don't know why they did it. It's like, well, you know, he said hello to my girlfriend, or he disrespected me. And so in order to be respected, you have to be willing to give respect. And sometimes, like you said, you have to be willing to be the bigger person and say, look, man, excuse me, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But the other party has to be willing to say, oh, man, that's okay, I got you.
Yeah.
You know, I know it was an accident. And too often, because of the disconnect, and I go back to the disconnect that's associated with how our young people are being raised through social media, they don't communicate.
No, you know, not face to face.
I know children that sit in the same room with one another and they text each other rather than talk to each other. And if you don't talk to somebody, you don't get to know the person. You don't understand the emotions that's associated with the person. And so because we've lost that piece, and we're gradually getting further and further away from that because technology continues to increase in such a way that, I mean, you know, if you really don't want to interact with somebody, you can get on there and play a virtual game, you know. And so we're living in a world where people don't actually see people. They see maybe pawns in a game that they're playing. And we need to get back to where people are actually seeing people and understand that there's a living soul and body in that person that's sitting next to you.
You know, and I'm following what you're saying, and you watch the things people will say behind a keyboard, right? And then what people would say in front of each other. Sure. Like, and they're going to ramp things up on a keyboard, and I wonder if they now don't have that skill set of negotiating an issue face to face, and now they just have almost a, it seems like the reaction to whatever the disrespect or whatever it was, it goes to 100%. And I'm not Pollyanna. I mean, I remember what it's like when we were young and all that. But is nobody just scrapping You know what I'm saying? And I mean,
you know, I'm glad you said that because
I mean, people were, everybody didn't behave themselves when I was a kid, but there was a lot more scraps and stuff. And guess what? You can scrap with somebody and work it out or not work it out. And 2 years later, heck, you're friends with that person. Right. They're alive.
Right. You know, my dad said this to me one time. He said, son, he said, most people are given the opportunity to engage in a conflict, in battle. Most of the time, they won't. And particularly if there's nobody else in the room with them when they get ready to engage in battle. Because the truth of the matter is this. Sean, if you and I were in this room right now and we got in a fight,
right,
and I punch you in the eye and you punch me in the eye, who wins the fight?
Yeah,
neither one of them. Both our eye hurt.
That's right. Doesn't feel good. And, you know, nobody, right. There's no cheering, you know, for it. But still, you and I can have that scrap about whatever if we were kids. And then 2 months later, we're back to being friends.
We're both going to tell the story to our advantage, nobody else witnessed it. So hey,
you should have seen me. Lawrence had nothing on me, but I mean that's, and I don't want to sound Pollyanna and go, well, I wish it was like the old days, but there's something there.
Right. Well, again, back in the old days, again, as a young kid. I can remember my granddad had a .22 rifle, and that was the only gun I ever saw in my grandparents' home. My parents, to my knowledge, didn't own a weapon. I'm first generation law enforcement in my family,
wow.
So my parents didn't own a weapon to my knowledge. My granddad, and the only reason I knew he had a .22 rifle is because he would take us on the weekends. He'd take us to what we thought was the country down in Theodore, Fire River,
right,
and on the creek. You know, every now and then a water moccasin would come up, so he had that .22 for that, and so. Other than that, I didn't have access or didn't see guns.
Right.
My grandmother had a butcher knife that she would, you know, cut fish and chicken and stuff.
Right.
But, you know, weapons we didn't have. The weapons we had were either our fists or a stick we'd pick up in a fight or something like that. But our children have access to so many things that I, in particular, didn't have access to growing up, that my children truly didn't have access to growing up, like handguns. While I had guns, once I got in law enforcement, they stayed locked away, and my children didn't have direct access to them. But our children today in our community have access to too many things, such as guns, and they're not necessarily going to academy or to the pawn shop to purchase them.
Right.
Somebody in our community that does not care about our community is willing to sell children handguns, or children are willing to break into people's homes or cars and steal these guns, and now they feel empowered by having that weapon in their back pocket when they get into a conflict.
Is it a chicken or the egg, though? You know, I've heard this discussion, too, and I think it's one that's interesting, that not all the kids go, hey, I want to go get a gun to defend myself. They go, holy cow, those kids over there have a gun, and they're threatening me.
Right.
I got to get a gun. It's so, almost like a, you know.
You're absolutely right. And so, you know, in having a conversation earlier today, me and Chief of Staff were actually having a conversation. Barbara was having a conversation. And, you know, really, some of the reason why our children are carrying guns or wielding guns is because maybe we didn't do a good enough job of making sure our community is as safe as it needs to be for them. And so these children do feel like they need a gun in order to protect themselves. So if eight of them are possessing a handgun, they're possessing them simply for protection because they know JoJo and Larry have a gun, and JoJo and Larry are bad guys. I mean, they're really bad guys, and they'll shoot you. So they got a gun to protect themselves. We've got to make sure that 80% or that 90% that have a gun for protection will put their guns down. So we've got to get JoJo and Larry off the street.
Well said. Well said. We'll come back more of this conversation with Director of Public Safety for the City of Mobile, Lawrence Batiste, our guest right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Our guest, Director of Public Safety for the City of Mobile, Lawrence Batiste, talking about what we've talked about several times, gun violence in our city and how to stem this. And you said holistically. So obviously you have the job of law enforcement we think about. Y'all go get the bad guy. Y'all arrest the bad guy.
Correct.
we can talk more. You know, we did get Anaya's Law passed in the legislature. Your feelings on that?
That is great. That's great for the state of Alabama. Now, we still have a hurdle to go with Anaya's Law.
Yeah, because we got to get it through a constitutional amendment.
Correct. And so we've got to get the voters to come out and vote for the change to the Constitution. But
how will that help y'all? How does that help public safety?
So that helps us when we have a young person or an older person for that matter that has committed a violent crime, and through the preponderance of the evidence that we have available to us and their criminal history, their criminal past, helps us keep that person locked up until that person's trials comes around and they're adjudicated as guilty or not guilty for the crime that we've alleged that they've committed. They've shown through their historical record and based off the evidence that's there that they're more likely to go out and pull the trigger and maybe kill somebody else. And
so we've seen this.
That's how
we've
that
seen
law
this happen.
Helps us, you know. And so great work done on that front by our legislators and by Chief of Staff Barber. And the other chiefs that came out to support us as we tried to push that through the legislation. So I'm certainly glad that we were able to get that done. But we still have a heavy lift to go with getting it passed and getting the voters to vote on it.
I tell you what, I'm a hawk about civil liberties, and I want to, you know, and I always try this balance between law enforcement and civil liberties. But if y'all go read the story of Anaya Blanchard and what I won't say his name, Dirtbag, had done just previously, and then exactly the same thing ending up killing Anaya Blanchard, you have no doubt of
when we started that legislation, you know, Anaya was still alive, and unfortunately it got the kind of national attention that we didn't want it to get, simply because Anaya died in the next year because it failed the first year. It did not come out of Senate committee. The next year it came up. That was the year in which Anaya lost her life because some guy that had shown that he was a kidnapper. And a predator.
Yes.
He was allowed to get out on bond. And what did he do? He stalks Anaya and ultimately kills her. And so it gets to the point that, you know, we finally get it passed. But it again, 3 years of trying to get that just out of Senate in the House for it to come to the people for a vote.
Right. And y'all know that's going to be one of the constitutional amendments on the law. And then we vote that through. Then Anaya's Law can take place.
Correct. Yes, sir.
Look at a text here from Grant. This is Grant. I second what you said. He said, educate them about the carnage. Talking about gun violence. It's ugly and it's sad. Life ain't a video game. There's no reset button. Wonder about that. If we're dealing with young people, showing them what somebody who got shot, almost like that scared straight stuff, but in a way, like, here, it's not a video game. Here's somebody. Look at the exit wound here. Look at the body of this person. Or the person's injured who's never going to be able to walk again or whatever.
So I don't know if it's so much as a trying to scare people straight as much as it is about what you said, educating them about, look, this is what the result of what comes out of that barrel and what it impacts. This is the damage that it causes. And there are a lot of different positions people take on that. In particular, when you start thinking about trying to talk to their children about some of these things that would take place, the problem is this: you know, whether we talk to them or not, they're hearing about it, or they're victims of it, or they're seeing it on Facebook. You know, as soon as something bad happens, people get out their cell phones and they start posting it out there without even taking any regard to, hey, that's somebody's child.
I know.
You know,
and that's a tough thing.
Letting them see that before they've maybe been notified, that somebody in their family has been harmed or injured.
No, I'm with you 100% on that. I'm thinking maybe afterwards with permission of the family. You know what I'm saying?
That's why I'm agreeing with you. I think we need to do it. I just think that we've got to figure out a way
to respect the family,
that people's that the adults understand that if we're able to put something like that in our school system, it's not to inflame people. It's really to try to make sure we educate our young people about the impact of gun violence, and particularly gun violence, because that's what we see more of than anything else. And so that they can get a feel for, you know, owning a gun does make you feel powerful. And if you own a gun and you're not mature enough to deal with what comes with gun ownership, in particular if you're still in high school, someone pushes you into a corner, you forget that you can still maybe use verbal judo to maybe get out of that situation. But I got a gun. I ain't got to get abused like this, and you pull out the gun, and
it goes from 0 to 100 immediately.
There you go.
Can you hold on 10 more minutes with us?
Yes, sir.
All right, coming right back. More with Director of Public Safety for the City of Mobile, Lawrence Batiste, our guest on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Friday. And our guest, Director of Public Safety for the City of Mobile, Lawrence Batiste. Before we wrap up, and I know you have meetings to go to, and I appreciate you holding on, but I do want to talk quickly here about the recruiting world into law enforcement. And I mean, I've been looking at the stats this week. The cities defund the police cities and the increase in crime. I mean, it's just, I wasn't surprised, but I'm heartbroken. I mean, violence goes, you get rid of law enforcement, and here goes the violence.
Well, you know, anytime you have a conversation around not funding, the one thing that government has a priority, it should be at the forefront of any government, is public safety. And yep. So you start talking about defunding public safety, you have leadership that won't stand up and support public safety.
What must that be like to be there and look at a city council that doesn't support you in Minneapolis or San Francisco or somewhere like that?
It would cause those individuals that have to stand in the gap on the front lines. You know, it's one thing to be
in blue line.
Yeah, literally, it's one thing to be the chief. It's another thing to be the guy that's patrolling that beat, and something happens in front of you. And if something happens and everything goes 100% the way you want it to go, people say, oh, okay, that's what his job is to do.
Yeah, you don't get accolades.
You don't get anything for it. And then same situation, but non-compliance, you have a situation where there's non-compliance, you have a crowd of people that gather, and all of a sudden something bad happens. And now that officer has done his job correctly, but now he's under scrutiny. His family, literally, their faces are posted on Facebook.
They put your address out there.
And all this officer, you know, wanted to do was serve his or her respective city. And now they're fighting for their very life and livelihood. The children that go to school are being ridiculed by other kids because their mom or dad are working in law enforcement. The wife is embarrassed to participate in community meetings if she does not happen to be engaged with other law enforcement
families. It is a backwards world. It's backwards.
So we've got some hurdles to overcome in that area there, but conversely, you see a lot of those officers that are from cities where they don't have the support, they are looking to go to other communities where they can do law enforcement, and they know that government does support what they do.
Do you think that helps recruitment?
I think eventually it'll help recruitment
for the cities that
back their law enforcement. But right now, some of them are just trying to figure out, you know, when do I leave, or should I leave? You know, is this gonna, you know, is this
what about retirement
pass?
And all that?
I mean, all of those things, you know, come into play when you're making a decision about uprooting your family. You know, it may be a good idea for you to get out of law enforcement in another place like that, but your wife, you know, your significant other may have a very good job, you know, that does, you know, that
or the kids
well,
are just about
kids.
To graduate and they have their friends.
So there are just so many challenges to getting people to do that. We are having challenges here in the city of Mobile. You know, we try to make sure that from a perspective of hiring, that our law enforcement classes reflect the demographics of the community that we are serving. But it becomes challenging. It's really hard, and particularly for African Americans, because a lot of African American families say, no, you don't want to go into that. I mean, don't put your life on the line for something bad happens and you're not even responsible for what happened, but you're being ridiculed for it. And if I think back to when I got involved in law enforcement 30 years ago, when I told my dad I was getting ready to go into law enforcement, and we didn't have anything bad going on back during that time, he's like, son, you sure? I don't really want you to be a police officer. And I told my dad this. I said, you're not providing for my family. I have to provide for my family. So I got in law enforcement because it provided an opportunity for me to provide for my family and not have to depend on subsistence from the government to provide for my family. But a lot of people are opting not taking that because, you know, there are a lot of people that are in their ear, and particularly family members, saying, don't do it. Don't put your reputation on the line to go and do a job like this. But if you're not willing to do it, who will?
Yeah. That's a super in-depth thing we're going to have to talk about in the future, because that you obviously I don't have the perspective of what it's like to be a black man or black woman who's going into law enforcement, but that there's not
there are some interesting dynamics
that there's not support there, and therefore you have fewer African Americans going into law enforcement, and then people point at law enforcement and say, look, it's not diverse.
Correct. There's very interesting dynamic. We could spend 30 minutes to an hour just talking about that dynamic.
I want to talk about that next time. That's very interesting. Because, you know, obviously I can't walk in those shoes, but to think about that, while we want diverse law enforcement and public safety and all that, that there's something outside of the job saying, don't do that.
Correct.
Make such a difference, and it's being pushed against.
Right. Well, it's part of the national narrative.
Yes.
Again, you know, we always teach our children, you know, what's happening at home and what's happening outside of home. You know, don't always compare what you have in your home to somebody else that may be doing something just a little bit differently than you, because if you do, that means, one, you're not content with what you have.
You're not living your own life. Yep.
And two, you're trying to be like somebody else, and you really don't know the dynamics that really take place in that other household. You just see what you can see on the surface, on the outside, what they're allowing you to see. But the reality of it is that in our community, we have a very good community. I always try to make sure I say this, is because we have a very good community that supports what we do in law enforcement and public safety. Mm-hmm. There are more people in this community that support the things that we do, and we're appreciative from a law enforcement perspective. Our police officers and our firefighters, they make enormous sacrifices, but this community also makes sacrifices, and they give so much back to the men and women that work in public safety in our community. So we are, as a component of this city, appreciative of that, and we appreciate the support that we get from people like you, Sean, too, for asking us to come out and talk about the positive things, even though they may say they seem like they are negative things that are happening, but you'll give us an opportunity to talk about the positive things that
always
we're doing, so we appreciate that.
Always. You know, I mean, for all the folks in law enforcement, I mean, you and I as friends, but all the folks in law enforcement, I mean, it's you're going to have to come back soon, because that's a conversation that we really need to have here about how to make changes in hearts about how we all live our lives here in Mobile and around the country. You brought up some great points. As always, a pleasure.
When you need me, text me.
All right. Will do. All
yes,
right.
Sir.
Coming right back. More Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Big thank you to Director of Public Safety for the City of Mobile, Lawrence Batiste. Always enjoy our conversations, and we get him back really soon. I want to say hello to my friend Larry Kirby, LCM Motor Cars. And Larry, let's talk how you get the inventory. Y'all are buying as well as selling.
Absolutely. You know, we've been pretty fortunate. We've been buying quite a few from, local, a lot of them are local one owners, and we've definitely bought trucks, we've bought cars, we've got SUVs, and even Jeep Wranglers off the street. So we want to continue to do that. It's great inventory.
And it's, and you're going to see the inventory at LCM is cream of the crop, and also the financing options are pretty deep as well. You can match us with the right lender.
Absolutely. We got, you know, a whole list of lenders, you know, credit unions, banks, finance companies, we got them all.
All right, let's do this. People want to check y'all out over the weekend. Kind of, what's your hour? Y'all in tomorrow, or what's it look like Sunday and Monday?
We'll be there at normal hours tomorrow, 9 to 4, and we will be open Monday, 8 to 6, normal hours.
All right, and so tell folks where to come find you online and in the real world.
On the corner of Highway 90 and Plantation Road, online at lcmmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook, just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. All right, and we grabbed some of your calls and got a lot of texts, but I'd like to hear from you, too, at 343-0106. I think that's an interesting conversation. I want to have that going forward with Director Batiste and invite more people into that conversation as well. Is that a tell? I mean, is it kind of an eye-opener? I mean, if you look at police departments, right, and you'll have nationally and locally, people will say, hey, you know, although I don't know. I don't know our numbers in Mobile by percentage. I hate for it to be percentages, you know, like it has to be 28.2% or whatever. But for the Chiefs to say they're having trouble getting, you know, and he said a diverse police department. He was talking about, you know, black folks, less black folks coming in than white folks into the police department. He said because they don't, people don't want to. That is, and then you turn around and you criticize law enforcement, say, well, they're not diverse. Look, there's not as many, you know, African-Americans as there are Caucasians or whatever on the thing. And then you turn around and hear somebody who is 30 years plus in law enforcement, and Director Batiste is black, and he's been in this, you know, in this field his after his military service his whole life. And for him to say, you know, we're trying to recruit those people, but they don't want to be part of it. There's a lot to be, and what is the cliche term everybody uses? There's a lot to be unpacked. There is a lot to be unpacked there. That's big. It's the criticism of the entity that then causes the issue for the entity to have members that, you know, are whatever minority, pick your part of the country. So those people don't want to get in, and then continued criticism of that law enforcement for that reason. So there's something big. Now, how do you change that? How do you change that? That's going to be a, I don't know, you don't do that through laws and you know, kind of silly bumper sticker slogans. You do that with, like, you got to change hearts. And you got to have enough people for critical mass. And not people look like me, right? Who cares what guys look like me? But folks that represent whatever that minority is, you know, if it is African-American or wherever in the country you're looking at that look like that, saying, you know what, that's a good profession. We appreciate that. We want so-and-so. I know him, and I know his mom, and I want them in law enforcement. Wouldn't that be a positive if the national movements and the aggression towards law enforcement, what if that was turned and they said, let's do this. Let's make sure we encourage folks from our community to get into law enforcement. What would that change? I think a lot. I think a lot out there. All right. And like I said, not a designated, like a top down, like you must hire X number of people whose skin color is this and X number whose sex is this, but encourage people from those communities to apply and get the people that are, you know, the best at doing it to get the jobs. And then they look like people from different communities. Probably going to be a tough pull to get this done, but that doesn't mean it's not worth doing. All right, a couple other things here. You heard Jeff talk about it earlier. The Alabama Literacy Act delay has been vetoed. This is something we were wondering about, what the governor would do. She vetoed the bill. So it says, let's see here. Governor Kay Ivey vetoed the bill passed by the legislature that would delay the Alabama Literacy Act, which requires third graders to read at grade level to advance to the fourth grade. The requirement will apply to the 2021-2022 school year. So, in other words, they are holding the standards for this year. The governor said she believes, quote, early literacy is the gateway to all learning, end quote. Hot take there. Adding to, quote, establish any delay in the Alabama Literacy Act prior to analyzing the 2020-2021 summative assessment data for reading would be hasty and premature, end quote. Governor also made it clear that the data from this school year will be available to the legislature, but we, quote, need the support and focus of the Alabama Literacy Act provides, end quote, to identify and address students' academic needs. So we'll watch this through the summer and so that testing. This is going to be, you know, I've said it yesterday, but said it several times in the past, too. I don't want to leave those kids. I don't want to make those kids who can't read at third grade level repeat the third grade, because there's probably a lot of stuff that they learned. So, okay, school system of Alabama and individual municipalities that have, you know, that are outside the main system, here's what we need. I think you make a pretty solid reasoning that relief, a federal relief money, whether the previous earmark stuff or the $4 billion the state has gotten, that if these kids come back and, okay, here's, these kids failed the literacy test. Let's get this turned around first. Let's get this turned around and get the letter sent to the parents and say, here's what's offered right now.
for your kid to start fourth grade next year, they need to get their reading comprehension and ability up to this level. We are providing sessions all summer. So even if you go see your grandparents at this time or whatever, we got a June, 2 weeks in, 4 weeks in June, 4 weeks in July, 2 weeks in August to get them. And then they take a test at the end of that program. Is it a 2 week program to get them up or three? I don't know. But they take a test. And if they pass that, boom, they go to the fourth grade. And so it doesn't have to be all like, oh, the only way to do it is to hold them back. No, we just want them to read at grade level to be in the fourth grade. So, hey, Alabama education, let's get cracking on that, huh? All right, text line here. Let's see. A named texter says Mobile's police department has a lot of black officers, but they get labeled with racist terms by racist progressives. I'm sure they do. And inside that, like Director Batiste was saying, like inside the community, not inside the department, but inside the community. A lot of man, when y'all write me, I enjoy your long texts here, but I just can't get them all read in time. Andrew said, we are so lucky to have Batiste here in Mobile. I listen to him about every chance I get. I would like to know what's going on with what seems like higher frequencies of shooting in the Dauphin Island Parkway area. You know what, Andrew, I'll ask that next time he's back. Is there something the general public doesn't know, or am I just perceiving higher frequency of unrelated violence in that area? You know, it moves around. But, I mean, that's why I texted and Director Batiste last night and said, hey, can you come on? Because it's like no amount is okay, but I'm not unrealistic. You have a community that's, 200,000, 300,000. There's going to be violence. But it's this chronic and acute at the same time. Gun violence issue in our city. Let's see. David says, do you want to fix the Alabama prison problem and the Alabama crime problem long-term in this state? Then you need the Alabama Literacy Act. The sheriff of Mobile County has said on your airways multiple times, show me the number of people who can't read at third grade level. After they get done a third grade, and I'll show you the number of prison beds I'm going to need in the future. Yeah, I remember that. He said, he's absolutely said that you number of people who don't have the reading skill set and who's going to need to be incarcerated down the road. That doesn't mean every kid, before you go type in the, I know a kid who couldn't, absolutely. There's tons of kids that, and especially this last year, it wasn't their fault, right? I'm not blaming the kids. Like I said, I saw that in our house. One of our children did remote learning quite well. One did not. Okay. And they're both my kids. But they're different human beings, right? So one did well with it and one did not. So the kids aren't at fault if they didn't get the lessons because they couldn't, do this thing online. But then you're kind by saying, I'm not going to let you go to the next grade until you have the skill set. But we're here to provide the skill set to get you ready for the next grade. We don't want you thinking you're not good in history or science. When you are, it's just that you don't have the reading ability. So that's, that's part of it. Why am I here and not snapper fishing? So, because I'm doing the show. I'm going to be snapper fishing tomorrow. It opened up at 12:01 a.m. And probably some of y'all that were out there waiting to drop lines at midnight. Now that I've gotten longer in the tooth, I don't do that. wait for daylight. But I'll be out there with you. Everybody act right tomorrow, too. We're talking about acting right at the boat launch. Act right out there on, public numbers or semi-public numbers. Just think how, and the problem is, it's just like anything else. Well, they started it first, but just think how you'd like to be treated out there. And if everybody kind of did that and sometimes said, they're being a jerk, but I don't need to tell them they're being a jerk. I'll just, whatever. I mean, believe me, I understand the idea of like, I'm in the right and I want to win this one. I get that. And that feels so good when you do it. But what does it fix? What does it fix? Talk about just manners, right? Whether you're in traffic, whether you're at the mall, or whether you're 25, 30 miles offshore. All right, coming back, hour number two of Midday Mobile, heading your way. Grab some more calls here and text at 343-0106. Also get a news update here and talk about Dr. Bill's forecast. It looks pretty darn nice. So hopefully you can get some outside time wherever you go this weekend.